We say it every Sunday. What is the spirit of this church?
Love.
Love is the spirit of this church. We could spend every Sunday talking about it, and I think the case could be made that we, in fact, do spend every Sunday talking about love. It's often said that love is hard to define and that there are so many aspects of it. One definition I like is from M. Scott Peck in his book, The Road Less Traveled. Love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Peck goes on to say it's an inadequate definition, that love is too large, too deep, ever to be understood or measured or limited within the framework of words. If you've heard me preach for any length of time, you know that for me, spirit or spiritual means our own human spirit, not something that is necessarily outside of us, apart from us, but is imminent within us and also transcendent outside of us, but connected. And the deepest, innermost parts of ourselves that we're trying to connect with, the connection that we have with others, and the connection with the larger natural world. And the connection is not just with those in this room or in our families or on these grounds, but that connection with everything, everywhere, all at once. That the spirit is the mind, is the body, is the emotions. And you'll know that that view is informed for me by the massage and body work and energy work that I did in a younger life, and from the Hoffman Quadrinity process that I did 20 some years ago. You do not have to believe or subscribe to any of that. I am giving you my location. But for today's time together, that is my presupposition. So let's take Scott Peck's definition. Love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Spiritual growth, then, is growing those connections, the deep and wide, larger love connection within ourselves, within with other humans, and with everything else. So feminist author and activist Bell Hooks took Scott Peck's definition and began to unpack how that definition of love is important and leads us to a place that broadens and deepens what love means. In her book, All About Love, she writes that society teaches us first that love is really romantic love. We see it in cartoons and movies and stories, the falling in love and everything works out and living happily ever after, usually just between two people, is sort of our first experience of what we are socialized to believe love is. Even within our family, we can feel love from our parents, but what we get coming in, how we're shaped and formed, are those images. And she asks us to examine the flaws in this ideology that if we fall, if we can, that it's about falling in love, and that if we can fall in love, then can we fall out of love? Like that we see it as this mystical force that leaves us helpless, actually. And so we're absolved of all responsibility then. And in fact, we're absolved of even any need for commitment. Because if we can't help falling in love, right? Like the song says, I can't help falling in love with you. I won't sing it. but then if we can't help falling in love, then we can't help falling out of love either. It's not up to us. So when things don't work out, it can't be because we fail to love and appreciate another person, or because we neglected to put in the time and effort that relationship took. No, it must be because we fell out of love. And Hook says this is both profoundly untrue and extremely problematic. And I'm guessing that Most of you in here realize that, if not all of you. It prevents us from viewing love as something that requires work and commitment. And love does require that. Love is continuous action that we have to take rather than the feeling that comes and goes. Love is a verb, not a feeling. It sounds so you, doesn't it? Deeds, not creeds, you know. If love is an action that we must intentionally take, then it can't be something that just overwhelms us. If we want to love others properly, then we have to accept that love is more than just a hazy feeling that envelops us and then spits us out. We must take a good look at ourselves and identify who we are as people, what we want in relationship, and what we give to it. Whatever our answer to that question, what do I have to give? What we have to accept is that it won't be perfect, that we are not perfect. Let me be clear here that love is also not abuse or toxicity. That's not love. And don't fool yourself into thinking that it is. Do not let any theology or ontology convince you to take abuse and call it love. Abuse is not love. Do we make mistakes? Sure. Are we imperfect? Yes. But love is not abuse, nor is it toxic. If you need further a conversation about that, come see me. And one other thing, love is boundless, and it requires boundaries. That's another sermon that will be preached this year. And if you haven't read it, I recommend the book All About Love by Bell Hooks, as well as The Road Less Traveled by Scott Peck. A commitment to a spiritual life, that willingness to extend ourselves for our own spiritual growth, requires us to embrace the eternal principle that love is all, love is everything. Love is our true destiny. Despite the pressures of society to conform to the culture of lovelessness, we still seek to know love, and we deserve love. There's a car meetup. It meets over near the Walmart out on 50, and those are the cars, and so today we get them. That's what that is. When we see love as the will to nurture one's own or another's spiritual growth, it becomes clear that all love is the same. There's no special love reserved exclusively for romantic partners, although I believe we can make an aspect of that. Genuine love is the foundation of our engagement with others. Vincent van Gogh wrote that love is something eternal. Its aspect may change, but not its essence. The essence of the UU faith is love. In 1976, before some of you were even born, and when I hadn't even been alive all that long, scientist Robert Miller authored Religious Value System of Unitarian Universalists. And the article says that UU ranked loving as an instrumental value and mature love as a terminal value more highly than did respondents from other groups, religious and non-religious. This means that love is our end goal, and love is the means by which we achieve that end goal. We love us into love. I love us for that. It reminds me of a magnet that I was given years ago. The only love you keep is the love you give away. Robert Miller found that UUs were more likely to assert the importance of love than any other group, religious or non-religious. And this was before the campaign now known as Side with Love. Since that time, we've seen and heard expressions of love and displays of love in action by UUs. Love is a verb. And love is our deepest common theological grounding. We answer the call of love because it is our common theological core. It is what can and does motivate us and illuminates our deepest commitments to each other. Like in our time for all ages this morning, we get to ask what is behind who we are and what we do. What's the heart at the center? And in the covenants that we hold, what is behind all that we hold dear? Love is not a feeling, it's a verb, and it's not behind us, it's in the center. We put it at the center of those new values. Justity, equity, transformation, pluralism, interdependence, and generosity. Love is in the center. This love at the center is a love that liberates. It sets us free. It inspires us to work for the collective liberation of all. When it's put that way, it's kind of overwhelming and may seem impossible. It does to me sometimes. But the Soul Matters themes have found and framed it in a way that is accessible, I hope. Our Soul Matters themes for the year are framed as the practice of. So for September, the theme is invitation. So the practice of invitation. For October, deep listening. The practice of deep listening. But there's a meta theme. It's not just the practice of invitation or the practice of deep listening, but how does the practice of invitation invite us to embody liberating love? How does the practice of deep listening invite us to embody liberating love? How do we, as Unitarian Universalists and as people of faith and global citizens, embody a love that sets us all free? Love as a choice, love as a willingness, love as to a love that it makes us extend ourselves for our own spiritual growth and the spiritual growth of others. In 2009, the Reverend Mary Harrington preached a sermon at our General Assembly for the service of the living tradition titled, A Lifetime Isn't Long Enough. Reverend Harrington described the trend toward activist and busy lives, trying to meet the many needs that are pressing upon us. She spoke of so much that cries out for our clear seeing, our compassion, our justice seeking. You've heard me say it from this pulpit. Quoting Thomas Merton, she warned us with these words, "There is a pervasive form of contemporary violence, and that is activism and overwork. The frenzy of our activism neutralizes our work for peace. It destroys our own inner capacity for peace because it kills the root of the inner wisdom, which makes work fruitful." Reflecting on those demands, as well as her personal struggle with a serious illness, ALS, Harrington reminded us that having an inner life is not a luxury. It is not a recreational option. It is a necessity. It is, in fact, a moral and spiritual imperative. No matter how many compelling family, school, or work responsibilities we have, this is, in fact, our greatest responsibility. To be awake to the reality Mary Oliver reminds us of, that even a lifetime isn't long enough for the beauty of this world. You are part of the beauty of this world. Full of rubies, exquisite jewels without price, which no one will ever enjoy, not even you, if they stay locked inside. There is a communal responsibility we have to each other to find and share ourselves with each other. It is holy work. Harrington goes on to say that relationships with other people are the hardest part of living. I believe that to be true. I have often said, and David knows this, that being married is the hardest thing I've ever done. I don't think, she says, after all these years, she was 57 at the time, She said, I don't think it's gotten any easier. We are all hopelessly eccentric, quirky, distinctive, particular. You can't really figure someone else out, no matter how hard you try. And just when you think you've gotten it right, things change. When I am over the top with frustration, fury, or despair, I ask myself this one question. When I can remember, what is the most loving thing I can do right now? It's difficult to think to do this. It's sometimes infuriating to contemplate. The answers don't always come right away or even make sense. But when I have remembered and when I have acted on love in the present moment, no matter what, I have never been sorry. This works at home and at work, and it works in church too. What is the most loving thing I can do right now? Love at the center invites us to this love that liberates. This year invites us into deep listening and repair, to presence and story, to inclusion, to trust, to joy and imagination. It invites us into a love that sets us free. Yes, it invites us into listening to our deepest selves, into opening to life's gifts, and to serving needs that are greater than our own. So let us say yes to love's invitation to itself. May we embrace this fierce love that is both the means and the end to our willingness to grow, to expand, to draw the circle wider for others and for ourselves. Blessed be and amen.